Hello, and welcome to another monster episode of Mysteries of Science. My name's Dan, and I'm the editor of Science and Nature, the monthly magazine from the team behind The Week Junior.
And I'm Kieran, the features editor. In each issue of Science and Nature, we explore the universe through in-depth features, news stories, awe-inspiring images, interviews with top experts, and much more.
We had so much fun right at the start of this series when we investigated the Loch Ness Monster, so we couldn't help but take on another mysterious and possibly mythical creature, Bigfoot. This is a giant, hairy, human-like ape who's loping through the North American forests.
I absolutely loved that episode, but if you haven't listened to it yet or any of our other mysteries, don't worry, because this one is as good a place to start as any.
And it wouldn't be Mysteries of Science without some top-notch experts. So who have we got for you this time? Well, we've got four authors who have done their own investigations into the Bigfoot stories, and they have actually reached very different and, I would say, wildly different conclusions.
So it sounds like you, our listeners, will have to make the decision. Is Bigfoot real? And if so, how has it avoided mainstream detection for so long? And if it's not real, how can you possibly explain all the rumoured encounters between humans and a large hairy beast in the American wilderness?
All right then, let's get down to business. It's time to hunt for Bigfoot. This is Mysteries of Science.
The tale of Bigfoot is one that always makes me think of telling stories around a campfire. You've got your burnt marshmallows ready to go, and it just conjures this image of a grand adventure. Okay, producer Adam, can we please get some campfire sound effects while I run through the basics of this mystery? Oh, much better. Okay, our mystery this week goes back a very long time, around 1,000 years, when the indigenous people of North America, that is, the people who lived there before others arrived and took over their land, they created cave art of fearsome figures that looked like shaggy, overgrown apes known as hairy men. Over time, many variations of this idea started to emerge. Creatures that are human-like, but larger and more furry. And in some versions, the beasts were scary, but in others, they were friendly towards the people who lived near them. Mischievous, perhaps, you know, stealing fish from nets, that sort of thing, but not a monster that you had to be terrified of.
Oh, right, okay. I don't think I knew that. I always just assumed that, like, Bigfoot were scary.
So did I, and some stories involving Bigfoot are scary, but we're not going to spend too much time on them today, don't worry. I think we're better off picturing the Bigfoot at the centre of our investigation as being a bit like Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster. She's not trying to capsize boats or pull people to their death, she just wants a bit of peace and quiet and will avoid swimmers who come into her waters.
Yeah, we should probably also say that Bigfoot is just one name for the creature we're talking about. You've already told us one of the other names, Hairy Man, but there are others too, including Sasquatch, which is the Salishan word for the creature. Salishan is the language native to the region of North America where most of the sightings occur.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point, Dan. And it's also worth, I think, saying that although there are variations of Bigfoot within North America, it's not the same as some other furry monsters like the Yeti or the Abominable Snowman, although there are similarities between them. And we will come back to that later on. But for now, we're only talking about the Bigfoot of North America.
Right, okay. So first of all, I want to find out about what this giant furball looks like. Can we get a Bigfoot expert in here?
Well, the Bigfoot identikit, I would say, is that it's this huge ape-like creature.
This is Susan Martineau, by the way, the author of many different information books for children, including Real Life Mysteries, which features Bigfoot.
And it's anything up to 10 feet tall, so 6 to 10 feet tall. He's got massive shoulders, about 3 feet wide, very, very big arms, covered in dark hair or fur, sometimes reddish brown, according to some eyewitnesses. And there isn't any fur around the eye and the mouth area. And its ears are on the side of its head rather than on the top, like a bear's. Feet are gigantic, about 1.8 feet long, and The other thing that some people have said is it has an absolutely disgusting smell. So that's something that it also comes through on some of the eyewitness accounts.
Wait, hold up. People have been close enough to Bigfoot to actually smell it.
Well, people have definitely claimed to have been close enough to Bigfoot to smell it. And in fact, according to the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, or the BFRO for short, there have been around 6,000 reports across the US and Canada of Bigfoot, only some of which have probably been close enough to get a good sniff of that stench. And the BFRO keeps track of all of these different sightings and smellings on its website.
I'm just so glad that there are things like the Bigfoot Field Researchers Association in the world. Okay, Susan, back to you.
There's one amazing eyewitness report that does give you a bit of a shiver, where it was a highway worker called William Rowe, 1955. He gave that sort of classic Bigfoot description that many people do. He actually raised the gun to shoot because I think he probably thought, I'll take this as evidence, you know, to show people. But he just couldn't bring himself to pull the trigger because there was something curiously human about the eyes. I must admit, when I read that, I thought, oh, God, that's so cool, you know. So I don't think it's as, you know, I think it's closer to us maybe than the apes.
You know what I think? The more episodes of this podcast we do, it seems that each mystery kind of had its own time period. So when we did Amelia Earhart, she was the 1920s. And for Bigfoot, it's definitely the 1950s and 1960s, because it was around this time that people first started calling the creature Bigfoot. So in 1967, there was this amazing recording. I'll let Susan explain.
Well, it's a film, an old-fashioned cine film taken in 1967 by two guys called Patterson and Gimlin. And they were they went to Bluff Creek in Northern California, and a huge area of forest. And they were riding horses through the area and saw this creature. And it frightened the horses, and they fell off. And one of them managed to take this film, which they say is of a Bigfoot. And it's actually, when you watch it, part of you's thinking, no, it's just someone in a gorilla suit. At the time, the Disney Corporation, they said it would have been really difficult to get such an amazing disguise, as it were. If it was somebody in a gorilla suit or in a Bigfoot suit, it would have been quite hard to do. And of course, there was no CGI or special effects in those days. So it's, I think the jury's out on it. I think a lot of people have, obviously hundreds of thousands of people looked at it over the years. But I would recommend anyone who's interested in this subject to have a look at it and see what they think. It's just part of the amazing fun as well of looking into all the evidence and seeing what's what.
It is a brilliant video. It's really convincing. Dan, I think you've got it there, and you're going to watch it and sort of tell us what you see happening over the course of this clip.
Yeah, it's a really short clip, actually, but it's down by a riverbank, I think. There's some fallen trees and some boulders, and then walking across, just in the middle distance, is a kind of dark shape. It's definitely loping along, and then it stops, turns, looks at us, and it's like this, yeah, it's a kind of massive hairy gorilla thing. It's really impressive. For a lot of people, that video that we just watched is their introduction to Bigfoot. And this is the case also for our next guest, Roderick O'Grady. He's the author of Bigfoot Mountain, published by Firefly Press. And this book is about a girl called Minnie and a clan of Bigfoots, a whole clan of them. But Roderick's interest in the Sasquatch goes way beyond his work. He loves looking into the mystery of it all too. And he used the real-life reports as inspiration for his story.
Well, I chose to focus on an imaginary group of Sasquatches who are lucky enough to live in a very remote, relatively remote part of the world. And so, although they are aware of humans, they hadn't had them as close to where they lived as they do in the setup in the book. And of course, if these things exist, they've been living forever in nature, so are fully in tune with it and know what to eat, where to find it, and how to gather it and keep themselves healthy, how to find water. Most reports are from very remote regions, as far as I can see, but they're also in quite densely populated areas for North America, not, you know, cities or in towns, but on the edge of human habitation. So they will venture in, or maybe their ancient pathways cross some of these regions, and some of them are reluctant to give them up. There are reports of them coming quite close to the housing complexes and crossing roads and using roads and railways as means of travelling. So they're not always in extremely remote regions.
Roderick's right. A lot of the sightings do occur near where humans live, and there have been sightings right across the US and Canada. However, most of the reports that we get about Bigfoot come from the northwestern areas of the US and western Canada, and that includes vast regions of wilderness like British Columbia and the Rocky Mountains.
I didn't turn my attention until British Columbia and the Canadian Rockies until I started writing this book, and it was only then that I realized how many thousands of square miles of forest there is up there, and it would seem like the perfect place for them to thrive, and indeed they seem to be. In America, there are many sightings in California, Northern California, of course, in the redwood forests, and in the Rockies. I think, and maybe I'm just being optimistic, I think really within the next 10 years there might have been some definitive evidence, and various authorities might will have put their hand up and said, okay, we knew about this, but we thought we'd better not tell you. This exists, I think, because of the internet, because of people communicating so rapidly and information spreading so rapidly around the world. It's almost an unstoppable avalanche of information, and people are just making their own minds up.
So, Roderick believes that Bigfoot exists, lives close to people, and that various organisations have known about it for a long time but have kept it secret for various reasons. Susan, what about you? What do you think?
I live in hope. I would like there to be... I would like it to exist. I think that's the answer, really. It's a bit... sort of non-committal, I suppose.
Right, we've got one expert convinced that Bigfoots exist and another one who's hopeful that they might exist. So you know what? We always like to get a bit of balance on the show, so we reached out to another author, US author Lindsay Eager, to find out how many Americans believe in their homegrown monster.
Ooh, okay, made up statistics straight from my mind. Here we go. So I think a good majority, let's say like 60%, will say, oh, it's just, you know, it's just made up. It's just a fun story that has gotten passed around, and it's just all kind of a big joke. I think there's going to be another maybe like 30% of people who say, yeah, probably there's not a species of half man, sort of half wild ape, living so in such close proximity to people and yet undiscovered. However, new species are discovered all the time. So, you know, could Bigfoot be real? Maybe not in the actual, you know, sense that we all, the cultural understanding of what Bigfoot is, but could there be something like a bit? Yeah, sure. Like there could be things, stranger things have been discovered. And then I think you'll get another group of people who, a small amount of people, but they're in there nonetheless, who either are full on Bigfootophiles, who like go out and go on hunts on the weekend and meet up with other Bigfoot heads and go to conferences and have all the radar and the night vision gear and take this very seriously. And also I think in that group there's people who are big time conspiracy theories, and there are a lot of Bigfoot conspiracy theories that maybe are less popular, but for sure would belong in that group. But I think if you take your average 100 Americans, almost everybody has a connection, some sort of connection or opinion about Bigfoot.
Lindsay's made-up statistics seem pretty accurate. So the most recent survey that I could find on the topic of whether Bigfoot exists or not comes from 2020. And that suggested that 1 in 10 people, so 10%, fall into the Bigfoot definitely 100% exists category.
Yeah, nothing like a bit of scientific rigour on Mysteries of Science, eh? And what do they think Bigfoot actually is?
The general idea, I think, is that Bigfoot is a human-like ape, and possibly shares a common ancestor with us humans. So that's to say that at some point in history, a now extinct species of ape evolved into two different species. There was sort of a branching of the family tree, and one branch became us, the humans, and the other became Bigfoot. And then there are some people who think that Bigfoot could even be a Gigantopithecus. That's an extinct species of ape known to have lived in Asia, and some people think that it may have been able to find its way to North America. And if you want to picture what that looks like, it was the inspiration for King Louie in Disney's live-action Jungle Book film. So it's a very big orangutan-looking creature.
So before we started this podcast, I'm starting to realise now that I love it. I love this idea that, okay, if there really is a Bigfoot, then there actually has to be quite a few of them to survive this long. So you might have a whole community of Sasquatches hidden away from the world.
It's brilliant, isn't it? Because you can't just have one Bigfoot. It's sort of like the Nessie problem. You can't just have one Loch Ness monster that survived for thousands of years. So maybe Roderick's idea of a whole clan of Bigfoots is sort of the line that we need to be thinking along. And if there are that many, it's impressive that they've managed to sort of play hide and seek for so long and only get caught out a few times.
Yeah, this is blowing my mind. So we know what Bigfoot looks like, and also that many people claim to have actually seen it and smelt it. So, like all good mysteries, people are really divided now over whether it exists or whether it doesn't exist. So let's find some more evidence. Let's bring some more evidence into the mix, Kieran. What are the main arguments in favour of Bigfoot being real?
I think the next major clue comes in the shape of giant footprints. Bigfoot has to have big feet. And the first of these major tracks popped up way back in the 1950s.
And it wasn't until 1958, really, when there was this nationwide reporting through newspaper taking up the story of a lot of footprints being found, huge footprints, at a highway workers camp in Bluff Creek, actually, area. And they said their tools and their equipment had been thrown around as well. And they found these huge footprints and took a sort of plaster cast of them.
Since that first find, there have been many different footprints that have been found in the US and Canada. And Roderick's research led him to analysis of these tracks by a professor of primatology. That's the study of primates, who works at a US university.
So he understands what the human and the ape footprint should look like, and he was called to inspect many footprints out in the wild, which he reliably informed anybody who would care to listen could not be human or faked, and he could tell us why, because he knew how the bone structure should work. And often these big footprints, would have dermal ridges in them, which are, you know, what make up fingerprints, but wider apart than a human hand or a human foot. The actual ridges on the imprint were different from human.
Footprints are a key part of the Bigfoot mystery. After all, they're what inspired the creature's names. And we could probably do a whole episode on the footprints alone. But as a quick summary, while some footprints are unlike anything a human could make with their own feet, there are several cases through history of hoaxed footprints or misidentified footprints. That is, prints that were actually made by things other than Bigfoot, like perhaps bears.
I think that misidentification point is key because it leads us onto some of the wider arguments against Bigfoot's existence, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. I think a lot of people, when they claim to have seen Bigfoot, they're just really seeing a bear. I mean, American black bears sometimes walk on two feet as well, just like a human. And that sounds like a Bigfoot to me. I think I can sort of imagine how it'd be easy in the forests to mistake a bear walking on two feet for something like a Bigfoot. In fact, one of the creepier photos, which was related to the Sasquatch mystery, was taken in 2007 by a camera trap. And it really does look like a Bigfoot creeping through the forest. But experts say it's actually a black bear.
That's a shame. And you mentioned earlier, Dan, about hoaxes, the fact that some of the footprints are a bit made up. Is there signs of trickery that go beyond just some faked footprints?
Yes, I'm afraid so, Kieran. Yeah, there are a few different examples of people who have claimed to have found a Bigfoot body, but when it's been analysed, it's turned out not to be one. Actually, there's one I was reading about from 2008, where some people claimed to have discovered a Bigfoot body and they sent it to a museum for analysis, and it just turned out to be a gorilla suit which had been stuffed with ice, which obviously then started thawing. So, yeah, not the most convincing of hoaxes.
No, I love the commitment, though. I love the commitment, if not the the skill used to create the Bigfoot. I love that. One of my favourite sort of pieces of evidence against Bigfoot existing is that people might be seeing apes in the great wildernesses of North America, but they might not be wild apes, and they could actually be, for example, you know, gorillas that have escaped from a zoo or a circus and have been able to survive for a few years in the sort of the habitats of North America, and people sort of stumble across them and obviously go straight to thinking that it's Bigfoot, which I quite like as an idea.
As with all of our mysteries of science, there are just plenty of theories out there, and it's fantastic. This one, actually, Kieran, is a cryptozoological mystery. Cryptozoology being the study of animals that aren't scientifically proven to exist, and they are known as cryptids. But as Lindsay points out, and as she explores in her book, The Bigfoot Files, that is just part of the fun.
I think the inability to reach a conclusion is the defining hallmark of cryptozoology. I think even if you did, even if someone somewhere managed to set a trap and catch a Bigfoot, there would just be... the goalposts would be moved for the cryptozoology community. I think that is less so than actually trying to find answers about a cryptid or about an unsolved mystery. I think that particular community, or maybe even that instinct in all of us, because I think we can all, maybe it's not with cryptozoology specifically, but we all have something like that in our lives where we're maybe not actually chasing after answers. We enjoy the chase.
The idea that we all have this urge to explore the unexplorable, to search for a mysterious creature that may or may not exist, and to enjoy the quest without caring about the ultimate destination is just brilliant and fascinating.
It's so great. And there is something about Bigfoot that just seems to connect to people in a way that the other big cryptozoological mysteries don't, even the Loch Ness Monster. I mean, remember earlier on when I said that Bigfoot is different to the Yeti? Well, it is. You know, they said to live on different continents. You've got Bigfoot in North America and the Yeti of Asia. But they do have a lot in common. And it turns out that there are variations of a human-like ape in lots of different places around the world.
Hi there, I'm Pete Gallivan. I work for the Royal Institution, which is a science education charity based in London. I also write the Head Scratchers column, which you might have seen in the Week Junior Science and Nature.
Hi, Pete. Pete got in touch with us a few months ago when he listened to the podcast, because he actually has a curious connection to one of these Bigfoot-like legends.
So I now live in London, but I used to live in a small village up in the Alps called Candersteg. And around Christmas time, they have this very strange folk tradition. And you'll just be walking down the street and suddenly a giant towering monster will come charging towards you, clanging a really loud cowbell, and just basically these monsters cause chaos everywhere. And these are called Pelt's Martyr, or in English, that would be kind of fur monsters. And the idea of these is that in ancient folk traditions of this area, the best way to tackle the demons, the evil spirits that are causing harm in the village, is to face them in their own form. So every Christmas and New Year's, young people from the village dress up in these amazing costumes. They represent avalanches, famine, or dangerous creatures in the forest, and the idea is that by dressing up as those creatures and terrorizing the village, you're then scaring away all of these evil, dangerous things that could harm you in the village.
Hey, Kieran, I bet you can't guess what one of those monsters looks like.
I will go with a big furry ape.
The one in particular that is relevant here is called the giant monster, the Grossmarty. And this is a giant 12-foot tall fur costume. And to me, this is the one that really looks like the Yeti or the Bigfoot or whatever it would be called in Switzerland. I think if there's any truth behind it, people will have seen scary creatures in the forest, but these were probably bears or creatures like that. Even to this day, if you go to Bern, the capital of Switzerland, they have bear pits where you can see live bears because you can't find them in the wild anymore, but bears used to roam all around Alpine Switzerland.
We already know what Susan and Roderick think about Bigfoot, but what about Lindsay? I asked her what she thought the story of Bigfoot was all about.
I really do think it's one of belief without proof. I think that's what it is. I think it's the thrill of seeing something, or just plumb making it up if you want, but the thrill of seeing something when you are out beyond sort of the safety of kind of human creation, houses, you know, stores, roads. The thrill of seeing something and then running back to tell someone else about it. Even though you have, and maybe you have a footprint that you put in, that you made a plaster cast of, or maybe you have some hair samples, or maybe you have something, but there's nothing irrefutable about your evidence. But the thrill of being able to tell the story of, I was, you know, sitting outside my tent and I saw these red glowing eyes, and then I saw this movement, or I saw this shadow of this giant thing. I think that's the story of Bigfoot. And also that it's in your backyard, that you could see something so close to your home, just a 15-minute drive up the canyon, and then pass that story along. That's the story of Bigfoot, I think.
This has been one of my favorite mysteries yet. There are so many possibilities, so many theories, and just so many opportunities for our imaginations to run wild with this one. What do you reckon, Kieran?
Well, like I said at the start, I see Bigfoot as the ultimate campfire story. It's the sort of thing that you want to chat about with friends just before you spend a night in a tent. And I can totally believe that that little spark of an idea and that spark of a story is enough to convince many travellers in the North American wilderness that that sort of rustling of leaves over there, or that slightly difficult to identify animal noise that you've just heard behind you, I can see that that's enough to convince you of a Bigfoot. So I think whilst there probably isn't a Bigfoot roaming the woods today, I think it's an absolutely great example of the sort of story that we like to tell, and how that story sort of develops over hundreds and thousands of years.
Well, you've heard from the experts and you've heard from us, but what do you think? Is Bigfoot real? Is he a distant cousin to us humans? Possibly he's just a misidentified bear, or even a strange figment of your imagination. We want to hear from you. Email hello@science-nature.co.uk to tell us what you think. You can either write in an email or record your thoughts on a short video or audio clip and send it in.
We're going to include some of those audio clips and emails in a future episode of Mysteries of Science, so make sure you send one in now. And remember to pick up the latest copy of the Week Junior's Science and Nature magazine for even more Mysteries of Science.
Yes, we'll be back in 2 weeks with our next mystery. We're shooting off into space again, but this time it's not aliens we're after. We're on the trail of a mysterious planet that was detected in our solar system a long time ago, but now seems to have disappeared. Yes, we'll be searching for Planet X. Until then,
stay curious.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.